I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. So happy to be a part of your day, a part of your constitutional education. And we're going to do something today that I haven't done in a while. We're going to do a bit of review. A very popular talk show host mentioned the other day that he was shocked at the federalization of our communities by executive orders. Shocked, he says. Can't believe that this would happen. So I'm thinking it's time for a review, because this isn't something that's happened in 2014. As a matter of fact, it's been happening for quite some time now, and it's something that I've been writing about on my website on Liberty First for years. As a matter of fact, there's just article after article after article about executive usurpation of power, about congressional ignorance and lack of action regarding these executive usurpations, the federalization of our cities, the federalization of our rural communities, the federalization of our law enforcement, all of these things, the federalization of our environment, of our health, all of these things are just moving us in one direction, a single focused direction to the complete federalization of our lives. And the irony is, it's the very thing that our framers set our constitutional republic up to defeat and the liberty to defend. And so what I want to do is I want to take just simply a little review. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the articles that I've written. Now, this is just, man, I have like over 100 articles on my website. I don't even know anymore. Maybe over 150 at this point. All of these. Constitutional study through historical review, application through contemporary issues. If you love the podcasts, then just go through the articles and just, you know, start reading from the beginning to the end. I'll apologize. My earlier writings are not as polished as they're becoming. I'm still not the writer that I'd like to be, but I notice when I read the earlier articles, They get better. They get better. I think that's true with any writer, though. You more you do it, the better you get. And I have not arrived yet, but it is something that I am improving on. And so I want to take you on a little journey through our writings here, this contemporary study of contemporary, put that differently, this historical study of contemporary events. Yes, that's what I meant to say. And so I'm going to give you the articles. I'm going to reference them for you so you can go and read them for yourselves. But in July 9th, 2011, I wrote an article called Do Your Job, Congress. It had to do with the Congressional Act, the Aviation and Transportation Act. And that has to do with the TSA, by the way. And we're not going to talk so much about the TSA, although we obviously could spend a show on that. But in this article, I talk about congressional oversight. I talk about congressional review. And it's something that we need to have a better understanding about. Congressional oversight is the review and the monitoring and the supervision of federal agencies, programs, activities, and policy implementation. It is something, an essential check and balance that our framers established within the Congress to create this limited and defined government to ensure this separation of powers. We do not have three co-equal branches of government. We were never intended to have three co-equal branches of government. I've said this many times before, but we'll just put this all, since we're all reviewing this in this episode. Congress was vested with the most power because they are the representatives of the people in the House and the state in the Senate. It was their job, it is their job, to make sure that the executive and the legislative and the judicial branches never do anything beyond the scope of the delegation of power in the Constitution. Why? Because they are the representatives of the people in the states, and they're supposed to be listening to the representative to the people in the states, telling you what the federal government is and is not supposed to do. And we know that the federal government was given specific defined and limited powers, and that all other powers were reserved to the states. And this understanding that through Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution, the power of the purse, the House had the biggest and largest opportunity and the greatest responsibility, mind you, to limit and define the federal government by spending. And so the House is never supposed to allow a spending beyond the delegation of power in the Constitution. Our founders spent a great deal of time discussing separation of powers and believed that this separation was essential to the protection of our liberty. Our founders also believed that a certain amount of blending of these departments was necessary to prevent one branch from usurping the power of the other. This is what we call checks and balances. The separation of powers is an institution that says powers cannot be shared and they cannot be stolen. And the blending, the checks and the balances, encourages and ensures that there will be a governance of each other. In Federalist Papers 47, Madison discusses this issue. Quoting Montesquieu, Madison relates that, quote, "There can be no liberty where the legislative and the executive powers are united in the same person or body of magistrates, nor, if the power of judging be not separate from the legislative and executive powers." Madison is explaining to us that the departments are not intended to be separate, that they have no partial agency in or no control over each other. Montesquieu was concerned with the whole power of one department exercised in the hands of another department. And Madison is assuring us, and assuring the constitutional critics, that the current Constitution provides safeguards against such encroachments and abuses of liberty. Madison demonstrates this principle of checks and balances by pointing out that the very existence of them in the several state constitutions that existed at the time of the writing of the proposed Constitution. He points out that nearly all of the constitutions blend these powers, not for purposes of usurping power, but for the purpose of partial agency and control. For example, the Senate, which is the branch of the legislative department, is also a judicial tribunal for the trial of impeachments. And in response to proponents of absolute separation, Madison explains that the very cause of liberty for which they fight is only obtained through the proper blending of power to achieve control and oversight. He says in Federalist 48, "It was shown in the last paper that we do not require that the legislative, executive, and judiciary departments should be wholly unconnected with each other. I shall undertake, in the next place, to show that unless these departments be so far connected and blended as to give each a constitutional control over the others, The degree of separation which the maximum requires as essential to a free government can never in practice be duly maintained. What Madison is saying is that if you truly want liberty, separation of powers along with mutual checks is vital. Madison understood that simply enumerating powers and identifying boundaries on paper would be an insufficient barrier to the encroaching spirit of power, he says. Liberty cannot be preserved unless you can allow for departmental oversight. And in light of the founder's perspective and the truth behind separation of powers and each branch's responsibility to check the power of the other and maintain oversight, we have to ask, where is our current congressional oversight even within the same branch? We see statement after statement how appalled or outraged our senators are at the gross display of authority by the executive branch. We've seen it by our Congress as well, our House of Representatives. They demand everything from control to dissolution. But they're creating this power. Congress needs to be reminded that it's their job to check what the executive branch is doing. I mean, this is absolutely insane for us to witness. Paul Ryan said that Obama's lawless executive actions are, quote, not high crimes and misdemeanors worthy of impeachment. I beg to differ, Mr. Ryan. I presented the case on July 13th, 2011, citing historical precedent about why Obama should be impeached, and it's all based on this abuse of separation of powers. The accumulation of all power, legislative, executive, and judiciary in the same hands, whether of one, a few, or many, whether hereditary, self-appointed, or elective, may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny, Madison said in Federalist 47. And that's exactly what we're dealing with here. The consolidation of power in the hands of one branch by the permission of the other, creating the complete federalization of America.
Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
July 13th, 2011, I wrote an article called Impeach Now, explaining separation of powers and how our federal government, through the executive branch and the acquiescence of the legislative branch, have allowed these essential checks and balances to be dissolved, and through precedent, our president in 2011 should have been impeached. That is not tinfoil hat. That is not extremism. That is precedent. Listen to this. In May, Democrats put forward the DREAM Act. 2011. Before a vote was even held, Obama passed the DREAM Act through executive order. Cap-and-trade legislation was defeated. This is already in 2011. We should not be surprised about what's happening. This was 3 years ago. Cap-and-trade legislation was defeated in Congress. Obama pushes his agenda into law through the EPA, an executive branch agency. Obama signs an executive order on July 12th, 2011, restricting the Second Amendment rights of citizens in the southern borders of the states, southern border states, Texas, California, New Mexico, and Arizona. Executive order in 2011. Obama's FCC decided in 2010 to assume the authority over the internet regulation despite a ruling by the Federal Appeals Court explicitly denying the commission that authority. In contradiction to the court's ruling, the FCC voted 3-2 in 2010 to pass the very first ever federal regulation on internet traffic. In 2011, Obama unilaterally decided he should declare war in Libya. When Congress disagreed, he simply ignored them, their lawsuit, and the War Powers Act, which is just a restatement of the separation of powers that already exists in the Constitution. In January of 2011, Transportation Security Administration head John Pistole announced that the Screening Partnership Program, which allows airports to privatize their security procedures, would no longer be available. The TSA's decision is directly contrary to the Aviation and Transportation Security Act of 2001, which statutorily grants the ability for the airports to kick out the TSA and privatize. And so the TSA unilaterally decided that Congress's act is null and void. Rather than push Congress to repeal federal laws against marijuana, the Justice Department decided in 2009 it would simply stop enforcing federal laws. Proposals to legalize marijuana at the federal level consistently fail, but that has not stopped the Obama administration. I will remind you, however, that federal enforcement of drug laws is the federalization of our land to begin with. So, I suppose the Justice Department is actually following the Constitution by nullifying federal law that's unconstitutionally established anyway. The Department of Justice has announced that they would no longer enforce the Defense of Marriage Act. The administration did not agree with the law, so they simply ignored it. However, another unconstitutional law, which now the Department of Justice is nullifying. All these people against nullification, and the Department of Justice is doing it all the time. Congress removes the card check provision from the Employee Free Choice Act to maintain the rights of the people to choose not to unionize. The National Labor Relations Board moves to reduce the length of time of elections in order to limit employers' ability to present their own cause against unionization, having the effect of overriding Congress and limiting the people's choice not to unionize. Congress establishes a greater liberty, and the National Labor Relations Board removes it. The Obama administration suggests that they could ignore congressional authority and raise the debt ceiling unilaterally in 2011 by, guess what, reinterpreting the 14th Amendment. That should sound familiar. The Supreme Court just did that to federalize marriage. This is crazy. Absolutely crazy. Following the November elections, Obama's party lost control over the House. Obama told America, where he cannot legislate, he will regulate. And this has been going on since 2009.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So how can we be so shocked by the federalization of America when we have a situation that has been going on since 2009 where the executive branch has literally promised us the federalization of America, and Congress, time after time after time, day after day, month after month, year after year, act after act, have simply allowed this to happen. We're doing a review of the articles that I've been writing since 2010, warning that this would come. Somebody needs to share these articles with these talking heads so they stop becoming surprised that our Congress has failed us, that the Republican Party has dropped their responsibility in office. And I say that as a whole because it's the establishment that's allowing this to happen. We have a few constitutionally minded people in the House and the Senate who are trying to do what's necessary. And each time they turn around, the establishment is undermining the constitutional efforts of those who actually understand what's going on. January 4th, 2012, I wrote an article called "Will a Spineless Congress Allow More Obama Lawlessness?" Okay, that was 2 years ago. In 2011, December 31st, 2011, Josh Earnest, then White House Deputy Press Secretary, said, quote, "The president will have a larger playing field. If that includes Congress, all the better." But then he added, "That's no longer a requirement." Obama didn't waste any time in thumbing his nose at the rule of law in 2011. January 2012, Obama announced that the recess appointment for the controversial Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and three new members to the National Labor Relations Board. A recess appointment. But Congress was not in recess. The president made a complete end run of Congress and violated his limitations in separation of powers. And Congress did absolutely nothing about that. Oh, when he announced it, there was this big outrage in Congress, right? The senators are like, oh, the president is usurping our power. It's tragedy. It's a violation of the Constitution. And when we get back from our Christmas break, we'll deal with it. I'm not kidding. Go do a review of your newspaper articles. That's exactly what they said. When we get back from our Christmas break, that's the first thing we'll do. No, it's not. As a matter of fact, when they got back from their Christmas break, there was a brand new crisis to be diverted from, and the people forgot that the president violated and abused the Constitution in a most egregious way. As a matter of fact, the very first president ever impeached was impeached for an unconstitutional appointment. On March 3rd, 1867, Congress enacted the Tenure of Office Act over the veto of President Andrew Jackson. The Tenure of Office Act was designed to prevent the president from removing any office holder appointed by a past president without the advice and consent of the Senate. Johnson did not acknowledge this limitation and publicly declared the 39th Congress was not a Congress at all. He dissolved Congress. He then removed the Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, from office and appointed Ulysses S. Grant in his place. On February 24th, 1868, the House of Representatives brought 11 articles of impeachment against Johnson, according to the Article 2 of the Constitution. These 10 articles were dedicated to Johnson's ignoring the separation of powers. Johnson was successfully impeached by the House, but was acquitted in the Senate after trial. You see, this is a precedent that was established, but Congress ignored that precedent, those strong checks and balances, and allowed our president to do what no other president has been ever allowed to do. We have a president who is operating in the tradition of tyrannical kings. In 2011, Obama said to an audience in Nevada, "I've told my administration to keep looking every single day for actions we can take without Congress." We should not be surprised at the federalization of this government, the federalization of our states, and the consolidation of power in the house of one, in the office of one branch. We should not be surprised by that. It's a promise that has been made and is being fulfilled. And where are we? We have now created the new American Soviet. The steps to federalization of America are all in place. To create a Soviet of America are just waiting for implementation. No, Mr. Talking Head, you should not be shocked at the federalization of our cities and rural communities, because in May 17th, 2012, I wrote about that. Our federal government is out of control. It is not the role of our federal government to regulate the daily lives of our citizens. It is not the role of the federal government to regulate domestic commerce. It is not the role of the federal government to tell farmers what to grow or to tell people what they can and cannot eat. It is not the role of the federal government to dictate the education of our children. It is not the job of the federal government to trespass into state criminal investigations. It is not the role of the federal government to control or rule our municipal affairs. But in 2012, Obama established federal councils for both rural and municipal affairs. Executive Order 13575 and an executive order that has still received no number, establishing rural council and establishing the House Council on Strong Cities and Strong Communities. The Rural Council Executive Order was passed June 9, 2011, and the Rural Council establishing control over municipal affairs was signed May 1, 2012. Russia called these councils the Soviet, and they are the final building blocks to communism. It is not the role of the federal government to be the people's nanny. It is the role of Congress to stop this encroachment. It's amazing what these executive orders are doing and have established the unlawful authority for the executive branch to do. Let me just read to you the executive order establishing rural council. By the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America. Total lie. This is not an authority vested in you by the president. I can't even get through the first stinking line. And in order to enhance federal engagement with rural communities, the federalization of our rural communities is what he's saying, it is hereby ordered as follows. I'm sorry. Presidents don't issue orders. Kings issue orders. How far have we come? As I slap myself in the forehead here. Section 1, policy. 16% of the American population lives in rural communities. Strong, sustainable rural communities are essential to winning the future and ensuring American competitiveness in the years ahead. These communities supply our food, fiber, energy. That's crazy. Food, fiber, and energy, safeguarding our national resources and are essential in the development of science and innovation. Though rural communities face numerous challenges, they also present enormous economic potential. The federal government has an important role to play in order to expand access to the capital necessary for economic growth, promote innovation, improve access to health care and an education, and expand outdoor recreational activities on public lands. To enhance the federal government's effort to address the needs of rural America, this order establishes a council to better coordinate federal programs and maximize the impact of federal investments to promote economic prosperity and the quality of life in our rural communities. There is established a White House council, a White House rural council, he says. And the Secretary of Agriculture shall serve as the chair of the council, which shall also include the heads of the following executive branches, agencies, and offices. And now this is the federalization of our rural communities. The power over our daily lives in the hands of the Department of Treasury, Defense, the Department of Justice, the Department of Interior, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Labor, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Energy, Education, Veterans Affairs, Homeland Security, EPA, and the Federal Communications Commission, the Federal Office of Management and Budget, the Office of Science and Technology and Policy, the Office of National Drug Control Policy, the Council of Economic Advisors, the Domestic Policy Council, the National Economic Council, the Small Business Administration, the Council of Environmental Quality, the White House Office of Public Engagement and Intergovernmental Affairs, and the White House Office of Cabinet Affairs, and such other executive agencies as the president seems necessary.
The weapon of my choice, don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So there you see, by executive order, issued on June 9th, 2011. Okay, do the math there. That's 3 years. We shouldn't be shocked by what's happening when it was established 3 years ago. Maybe we're shocked because we never knew about it, because the media never talked about it. Fox never told us about it. So now our talking heads are shocked by what's happened because they never did their own research to find out that there is a 25 executive agency council that rules and reigns over our rural communities. A 25 executive agency council that is expandable by the president or the Secretary of Agriculture. Go read this executive order. Then continue on with the executive order establishing White House council on strong cities or communities. And you will see that we have once again a 25 council, executive agency council, who now rules over our cities. Yes, to establish strong communities. The same 25 as mentioned before. The same 25 executive agencies ruling over us with the opportunity to expand the agencies ruling over our cities from time to time as he wishes to designate. Building blocks of communism established in 2011 and 2012. And we're shocked? Why? I don't understand this. Why are we shocked? How about we resolve to end this dismay? How about we resolve to share some truth? Here's a resolution that I put forward on December 31st, 2014. Let us be dedicated teachers of truth and students of wisdom. Let us honor those who sacrifice all so we could be free by picking up their fight for liberty. Let us promise to never again vote the lesser of two evils and be men and women of principle and moral fortitude. Let us deny the ignorant and corrupt the power to destroy our Constitution and our liberty. Let us refuse to submit to illegal authority and make use of our right to resist all unlawful orders, executive orders as well, and laws regardless of their source. Let us never allow the cry of necessity to supersede our attachment to liberty. Let us love our posterity more than our current comfort and convenience. These are things that we need to be focused on. Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to John Dickinson in 1801, said our fellow citizens have been led hoodwinked from their principles by a most extraordinary combination of circumstances. But the band is removed, and they now see for themselves. America, we have been hoodwinked, led from our principles by the most extraordinary combination of circumstances. We sit here amazed in 2014 of what is going on in America, an amazement that should be not an amazement, but a realization of the falling into place of all of the communist planks that have been placed in our government in a rapid pace since 2009. We need to be in a restoration movement. We need to remove the band. We need to help the scales fall from our eyes. We need to no longer be hoodwinked by immoral and vain promises that work to destroy our lives. We must vow to stand against this. We must daily celebrate the ratification of our Constitution, the document designed to restrain government and guide it in its our preservation of liberty. We can't be shocked anymore. This has been going on now for a long time. It's time to step up and stand up. It's time to take our country back.